What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Cameron Costa. Today on our podcast, Ray Dalio on 500 years of empires.
What we're seeing now happen has played out many, many times in history.
The founder of one of the world's largest hedge funds in history on rising prices.
Cash is not a safe investment, is not a safe place because it will be taxed by inflation.
And competing with a new economic empire in China.
If you look at the word country in China, it consists of two characters, state, family.
And we're heading into the metaverse, how NFTs are transforming donations this Giving Tuesday with venture capitalist Bill Tai.
We're right at the beginning of what could be a structural change where any cause, any community of interest can get their members engaged and fuel their causes in a low friction way.
But first, fears of the Omicron variant spooking just about everybody.
People are just preparing for the idea that the reopening could get pushed back a little bit by a number of months.
And Twitter's CEO shakeup, all on today's podcast. It's Tuesday, November 30th, 2021, and Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue please.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin.
Futures plunging after the Moderna CEO reiterated the same Omicron concerns that he told us about yesterday. This time, I guess maybe it was in print. I don't know. We put it in print, too. We'll talk about what else could be at play. You never know.
Let's talk about those Stefan Bonsell comments, because that's what appears to be moving the futures lower, though, as Joe said, he made similar comments to us. He also made some comments to the FT, which published that in an interview with him. Stefan Bonsell, of course, the CEO of Moderna, where he said that he expects vaccine efficacy to drop against the Omicron variant. Now, Squawk viewers will remember that he told us pretty much the same thing at about 7 a.m. yesterday.
We believe this virus is highly infectious. We need to get more data to confirm this, but it seems to be much more infectious than Delta, which, of course, is problematic. Given the large number of mutations, it is highly possible that the efficacy of the vaccine, all of them, is going down. But we need to wait for the data to know if this is true and how much is it going down.
And he said it would take several weeks to gather more data about the vaccine efficacy. Now, his comments to the FT also coming just hours after Fed Chair Jay Powell, in prepared comments to Senate lawmakers ahead of testimony today, said that the recent uptick in COVID cases poses a threat to the U.S. economy and muddle an already uncertain inflation outlook. But you'd think in certain ways, guys, that that second part, the Jay Powell comments, first of all, I don't understand why the markets are reacting the way they are right now, given those comments have been out, as far as I could tell, at least 24 hours, if not longer. The second part is that if you look at the Jay Powell comments, they're sort of like the Bill Ackman comments, which is to say, well, you know, if this is going to cause a problem for the economy, he didn't say that he was going to, stop tapering any sooner or let the punch bowl go on longer. But you'd think he would.
He said, though, that it created problems for both of the Fed's mandates, both the unemployment picture, because people won't want to come around.
You have the employment problem one side and inflation with supply.
And the Fed can't fix that.
It's a stagflation.
You can't make people come back. Yeah.
It's a specter of stagflation. It's, you know, if supply chain problems are going to cause prices to go up and, you know, the 10-year is telling us that growth is going to be affected by reclosing in whatever area you want to look at. Maybe it's not widespread, but at least international travel. And I mean, are we going to Davos? Did you guys think about that?
I'm planning on it. I've got my plan set up. I'm planning for dinners.
It's below our pay grade to make those decisions. But someone's going to make those. I'm kidding. That was for management. That was a joke. But someone's going to make decisions, and you know, places are very risk averse. I can't imagine I don't want to get stuck.
Not
in
being
Europe,
able to come
do
back.
You? Not in a place I get put up over there. And no room served. No, you can't even get food. I eat pizza like 3 times a day. Well, Swiss pizza.
Part of the question is going to be, do they require, what's the definition of fully vaccinated? Are you fully vaccinated after 2 shots? Or now that you are seeing this, do you have to have a booster shot to do some of these things? I think those are questions we're still
Boncel about. Yesterday said to us, we had a long conversation about when a new vaccine that was catered to Omicron would be ready. And he said early 22, why would we have been talking about the need for a rejiggered vaccine if he wasn't saying that so I don't understand why.
They don't know for sure. I think it'll be a couple of weeks before they know
we knew that there might be a problem. The market reacting this way, right?
Right. We knew it wouldn't be. Markets move. It's what is it? 2%. It's not that. It's a big. It's 400 points. Yesterday when we were rebounding 300, it was a slight rebound. Today when we're down 400, it's right. It's a resumed crash.
But you're still talking about only a couple of percentage points. If you're looking at the total, like down 900, up 200, down 400. Literally, it's a couple of percentage points at this point. So people are just preparing for the idea that the reopening could get pushed back a little bit by a number of months. I think that's kind of how people are going about looking at this. But right. Andrew, back to your point about the Fed and those comments. If the problems with the supply chain and problems with trying to get people to work, the Fed's not going to be able to fix that. The government's not going to be able to fix that. Right. The more money that they put out, the less likely people are to come in and come back to work.
I'm sort of in the Ackman camp on this one, I think, which is if the Fed doesn't take the punch bowl away, if they keep it out there a little bit longer, that's probably good for equities. It's probably bad for bonds, right?
Well, there's the other side. People did say that he's going to taper quicker because we're going to have bigger inflationary concerns.
Well, that would be the other.
There's a yin and there's a, there's either or. So I don't know. I just like the Ackman low. That's my favorite Ackman call because that really, and we're doubled the market from where hell was breaking this. I would like to know what the cases look like in terms of severity, not just transmission, because we're seeing some anecdotal evidence that it's
Africa,
not that. You want to talk? Go
everybody's
ahead.
So young. No, I was just going to say the problem is that everybody's so young in South Africa. It's not a problem. It's maybe a benefit, but we're not going to know for a couple of weeks because everybody's so young there, because the average age is so young that everything looks mild, and hopefully it is mild. But
it would be a problem if it was a really serious case and it was in young people, for example.
Right.
So, I mean, we should be 100% gratified that young people have a stronger immune system and it seems to be mild cases. That's tough to take that in a negative way. Hopefully, Delta was so much more transmissible or contagious than the original. I've read things that this could be a multiple of times
like
as contagious
500,
as Delta.
500%, right.
Yeah, which would
or 500 be. 500 times, no. 500%,
Yeah. So do you get the that's the other thing. So you definitely want to get the booster that's not the third booster or the third shot that's not catered to this one specifically, but get it anyway with the notion that you may be getting another one in early next year, that if we needed one that was specifically used for, and you guys know that Omicron, you must have noticed, Becky, that it's a jumbo anagram.
Omicron. It's a jumble anagram for, I haven't noticed that. Let me write it down. Hold on.
You'll get it. I had to check a few times because I couldn't believe it when someone pointed it out to me. Moronic. Anyway, news, news just, do you believe that? I mean, it really is. It's the same letters. It's not quite a palindrome, but.
It is. Holy cow.
It really is.
We are watching shares of Twitter a day after CEO Jack Dorsey stepping down and CTO Parag Agrawal taking that top job. Effective immediately, shares closing lower by about 2.74% yesterday. Now, Dorsey will remain a member of the board, but only until his term expires in 2022. He'll be succeeded as chairman by Salesforce COO Brett Taylor. Dorsey said that he decided to leave Twitter because he believes the company is ready to move on from its founders. Now, Agrawal is 37 years old and has been with Twitter for more than a decade. He had been in charge of strategy involving AI and machine learning and led projects to make tweets and users' timelines more relevant to them. But big questions as to what his departure really means, how it really happened, how much of it was pressure by activists like Elliott Management would seem to like the new CEO coming in. But also, I think there's investors wondering what the strategy is going to be. I don't think the strategy looks like it's going to be dissimilar. And given how Jack had been working at Square at the same time as Twitter, it's unclear how much of his eyes were actually on Twitter in the first place.
Yeah, a lot of those changes they announced already, just in terms of trying to double the revenue by 2023, all of the new products that they've tried to speed up and bring to it. So I think a lot of the changes in terms of the strategy came already, like you said.
You saw the scuttlebutt. It he's just going all in on crypto.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sort, yeah.
Could be. But crypto and philanthropy. You know, I think Forbes puts him at his net worth at potentially $11 billion.
I'm still afraid to go all in on crypto. I believe in it a lot more than a lot of people. Yeah. I will say that, but I'm still just waiting for.
I don't know if he's leaving just for crypto. I thought that was
too much. That's just a scuttlebutt. I'm not saying it's, you know, you probably, you're on HuffPost and Mother Jones. I looked at Drudge and it says bets on crypto for why he's.
I think that's been part of it.
Drudge, I don't know what Drudge is anyway. It's a Drudgington Post at this point, half the time. I need a new. I'm just going to just use CNBC for all my news. I think CNBC.com.
Good plan.
Coming up after this break, investor Ray Dalio on market worries competing with modern China and what looking at 500 years of history taught him about timing the market.
To say, here's the stock market. And I'm going to time the movement into the market. I'm going to time the movement out of the market. Just the way you said it is going to be a fool's journey.
Squawk Pod will be right back.
The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tasty Trade. Tasty Trade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tasty Trade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable, but the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
And Andrew by.
This is Squawk Pod from CNBC. Here's Andrew Ross Sorkin.
Welcome back to Squawk Box. Looking to the lessons of history for hints of the future is our next guest's latest principal, Bridgewater Associates founder, chairman, and co-chief investment officer Ray Dalio joins us. Dalio's new book is called Principles for Understanding a Changing World Order, and it is out now. And we're thrilled to have Ray with us this morning. You've looked at empires on the way up and on the way down. Over many centuries in this book, you've also looked at the different metrics with which to think about all of this. And so I'm hoping you can maybe contextualize the moment we're in today by looking at history, Ray.
Yeah, the same things happen over and over, and you can't understand today without understanding the patterns and lessons of history. So I needed to do this for my own investing. There were three big things that caught my attention and never happened in my lifetime before, but happened many times in history before, and then two others that became apparent. Well, first, the financial. What does it mean to try to raise living standards by producing a lot of debt and printing money? Well, how does that move through the system? Second, the internal order and disorder. And when you have large wealth gaps and political gaps, and when the causes that people are behind are more important to them than the system is in jeopardy, that internal conflict. The third, of course, is the rise of a great power in the form of China. And we go back in history and we see how the great power conflict is important. The fourth, which I only really discovered in the book, is these once in a 100-year type of nature events. Pandemics, floods, and droughts have killed more people than wars. And then what comes through in the study of history is the power of inventiveness, human adaptation. And so what we see this playing out every day in the form of the battle, for example, between nature and technology. And only by seeing those patterns and then understanding that could I deal with what's happening now. Because you see that almost every subject that you're talking about is in one of those five categories, and it's how they relate together. So when we think about vaccines now, for example, we know what monetary policy will be as a result of that. We know what impact that will have on the markets as a result of that. Only by seeing that dynamic over a period of history could I deal with what's going on now.
Ray, it's a fascinating book, and I learned so many things. It's very hard to put a coherent narrative together that really takes you through, you know, many centuries and provides sort of a framework to look at all of this. Considering that framework and considering the sort of nature pandemic issue that you're talking about, but then also what you think the Fed invariably has to do, what do you think today they invariably have to do? Because I think right now, for a lot of investors, that is an open question.
Well, I don't think it's much question. What happens is if the pandemic comes along, and we have the associated economic problems with it, the Fed will print money, and because if they don't, we'll have a political clash. And so they'll produce money and credit. The central government will send out checks in the same way, and it'll do that, and that'll reverberate through the society in the same way. You can't raise living standards by raising the amount of money and credit in the system, because that's just more money chasing the same number of goods.
Right.
So over that'll be the dynamic. It'll affect financial markets in the ways that we've seen. And it'll also, of course, affect the inflation rate. It won't raise living standards in an important way because, as I say, it's more money. And so there's that dynamic that'll have political consequences. And we're seeing that now. As inflation then begins to bite, then that has political consequences. So it's that dynamic. What I'm trying to convey in the book and in the way that I'm thinking, I'm not ideological. I'm just mechanical. I just want to show the cause-effect relationships that repeat over and over and over in history. And that's, that's it. There's a chapter in the book which is about the value of money and how that works. Through the centuries, through time, it's the same thing. What we're seeing now happen has played out many, many times in history. So it's like watching the movie over again, and that's why I wanted to pass it along.
But Ray, if you're Jay Powell right now and you're trying to weigh inflation on one side and employment on the other, you see supply chain problems potentially coming, especially with this new variant on one end, but then you're still trying to solve for the employment side of this. What do you do? You keep printing because printing might create more inflation.
Yes. Look, let's be clear. There's the perspective of what an individual should do, and then there's the perspective of what a policymaker will do. He will be caught, or the Federal Reserve will be caught between the rock and a hard place, and the politics that exist at this time. Mean that just imagine an economic downturn. We're at each other's throats now when we have all this money and credit has come out and there's almost a sugar high. Just imagine if we had an economic downturn, what that would mean. And just play that through. It's almost a type of civil war between different kinds of state rights and so on and so forth. So the situation that we're in, which has happened repeatedly, is that there's not enough money around. And the only way you get the money is to tax it. And then when you tax it, and then people they don't like it. So the easiest thing to do is to print money and to produce money and credit. So we can expect that thing to happen. So just as an investor, I have to sit here and I think, what is my next move? And how do I play with that? For example, real interest rates will come down. That would be good for inflation index bonds, by way of example. So anyway, what I'm trying to convey is that mechanism. And we got ourselves into the circumstance because we didn't have to handle the fundamentals the best possible way. Let's talk about what good fundamentals are. Good fundamentals are that you earn more than you spend, and that you have, therefore, a good income statement and a good balance sheet. Right. And you do that by being productive. And you also have internal cooperation, competition, and so on in a healthy way to make you more productive. And you don't have those political problems. But you see repeatedly in history this arc, or that when you have this confluence of things happening together, you have the dynamic. So what I just wanted to convey, right, and I needed, I wrote this, I did this research for myself to make these investment decisions. What I needed to do was to see the mechanics of that. And that's what I'm really conveying. Yes, there's a rock and a hard place.
Ray, in terms of just bottom lining it, for those in the audience this morning that beyond thinking about buying your book are thinking about whether they should be invested in the market, putting more money in the market, and I'm thinking about equities right now, taking money out of the market. How do you value this market today?
I think that just the way you said it is going to be a fool's journey. To say, here's the stock market, and I'm going to time the movement into the market. I'm going to time the movement out of the market. Okay, you know what that means? Okay, you're going to out-guess what the next variant move is, and what the next other thing is. A lot of things depend on a lot of other things, and the world and everything readjusts. What has to happen, I think, is investors, most importantly, have to realize two things. First, that cash is not a safe investment, is not a safe place, because it will be taxed by inflation. There will not be an interest rate that will anywhere near compensate. And it seems good because it's not volatile, but you're paying a tax of a few percent a year on that. So A, stay out of that. And then B, know how to balance a portfolio, because the way portfolios work, it's almost like for some part, something happens, another thing happens. In other words, what you can see in the markets today is that, let's say, when equities go down because growth expectations falter and there's a greater likelihood of easing, then you see the bond market go up. And when you see other markets, gold, you're seeing. Watch the market action on every day, and you could see those relationships. Wealth is not destroyed as much as it is transferred. And if you know how to balance those investments, we do it in what we call an all-weather portfolio. But if you know how to balance those investments, that's the most important thing. Be in a safe, well-balanced portfolio. You can reduce your risk without reducing your return, and you will not market time this, because even if you were a great market timer, the things that are happening can change the world, so it changes what should be priced into the markets.
Hey Ray, one of the things you do write about is China. Some would argue that you have a generous or more sympathetic view to China than perhaps some of the most hawks, if you will, about China. But you think that there's sort of an inevitability to the transfer of wealth of sorts.
Well, okay, two things. China, transfer of wealth. I just know China very well. And I come as a perspective, with a perspective as an investor. I've been going there since 1984. I know leaders, and I know how they're thinking, and I know the moves that they're making in a detailed way. And I'm just trying to share what that perspective is, because I think a lot of people make stereotypical moves. And I think you have to really understand, first thing you have to understand, because it has been a remarkably successful place. Since I started going there in 1984, per capita has increased by 26 times and so on. So to not understand it or to approach it with a great bias is a great disservice. Okay. In terms of the element of, let's say, a transfer of wealth, or let's call it common prosperity. Yes, there's a world in this world right now. There is a much more, there's a move to common prosperity. I think that that move, what does it mean at a technical level? That's not take your money away. But here, I would say what are called progressives here are much more left than what we would call progressives or whatever the Chinese policies are doing. But yes, worldwide, there has to be common prosperity, or let's call it broad prosperity. And the question is whether that's going to come about by productivity or not. It doesn't mean that you're going to have like a communism that's going to take all of that. There's going to be a lot of productivity in China. And so, again, diversifying the portfolio. Right. You look at the United States elsewhere, you have to diversify.
One of the quick questions I just want to ask you on China, though, is clearly there's human rights issues. There's questions right now about this Chinese tennis player, Peng Shui. There have been questions about Jack Ma. How do you think about that piece of it when it relates to investing there?
Well, I can't be an expert in those types of things. What I basically do, and for 50 years, I invest all over the world. I look to whatever the rules are. If the government has a policy that I should do a certain thing and so on. But I can't be an expert in all of those particular dynamics of that. I really have no idea. So the guidance of the government is the most important thing. These are political. It's like, and then I look at the United States and I say, well, what's going on in the United States? And should I not invest in the United States because other things and not our own human rights issues or other things, and I'm not trying to make political comparisons. I'm basically just trying to follow the rules, understand what's going on and invest properly.
You recognize, I think that what's going on in the United States, and there are things that happen in the United States that I don't agree with, that I imagine you don't agree with, but I think that those things are different than some of the things we see happening in China. People aren't, the government isn't disappearing people, for example.
Okay. Look, you want to get into the policy of disappearing people. I'll give a little bit of a perspective of that. Okay, what they have is an autocratic system, one of the leaders described it. He said that the United States is a country of individuals and individualism, and that's what it's about. He said in China it's an extension of the family. He said, if you look at the word country in China, it consists of two characters, state, family. And that has to do with Confucian. And it's very much a top down. And as a top down country, what they're doing is that it's that kind of like a strict parent. They behave like a strict parent and they go through that. That is their approach. We have our approach. That's a question. The notion of whatever they're doing in terms of calling in people and then behaving in a certain way, that's their approach. If I picked that, evaluated all approaches around the world, in all countries, I'd be in a bind to try to find out, where do I invest and so on. It's just not my domain, and I'll leave it to the government to make those decisions. And that's my basic approach. I have a job to do, and that's how I'm trying to do it, consistent with the rules. And I can't say that. That's like with kids and watching video games. Their approach is, we don't want our kids to watch these trashy video games X amount. So they'll control the type of games and they'll control how many hours it is. In the United States, that we would believe that, most people would believe it's a parental student decision. I can't tell you which is better, but the one thing I can tell you is, in this competition, the only thing that'll matter, most important thing that'll matter, is how strong we are. Okay. And so if we can earn more than we spend and we be productive and we can be good with each other and don't have a conflict that undermines us, then we will be strong. So it's a competition between systems. And that, I think, most importantly, let's do the things that are right to make us strong and be effective in that competition.
I want to thank you for joining us this morning. Congratulations on the new book. It is called Principles for Understanding a Changing World Order, and it is out now.
Cheese will be next.
Next on Squawk Pod, the trendiest way to give this Giving Tuesday. Could it be on the blockchain? A conversation with Zoom's first investor and one of the earliest bettors on the metaverse and crypto, Bill Tai.
If you think about Silicon Valley and its role in modernizing the world's economies, it used to be that all electronics devices were made out of things that looked like light bulbs.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod. It's Giving Tuesday, and what better place to go, virtually, of course, than the metaverse? Confused? Okay. People and companies have been donating cryptocurrencies for a while, since 2014 among the earliest adopters. And those donations, though trendy, worked similarly to a stock donation, so nothing revolutionary, really. But now, with the advent of NFTs, a new option has emerged for nonprofits: royalties, donations in perpetuity. If a portion of an NFT or non-fungible digital token sale goes to charity, then the next time it's traded, a percentage goes to charity again. As the NFT increases in value, so does the donation. It's a pretty exciting model. I jumped on a call with one of the earliest crypto optimists.
Hi, I'm Bill Tai. I'm a venture capitalist, and I'm also a co-founder and chairman of Metagood.
Metagood is Bill's latest venture. It's an NFT marketplace that enables donations with every sale, and it has a pretty impressive group of backers.
Charlie Lee that invented Litecoin, the guy that invented Etherscan, it's Richard Branson's kids, it's Owen Wilson, Woody Harrelson.
No surprise there. Bill is well-connected. He was an early backer of over 100 companies, including Twitter and TweetDeck, and he was the first investor in Zoom, the pandemic game changer, and our platform of choice for this particular conversation.
Can you hear me? I'm going to cut my video for a second. My 10-year-old's on Roblox right now next to me, so he's using up all of our bandwidth.
Bill is also a famous kite surfer, fun fact, and he's backed a few blockchain biggies. One of, for example, and Dapper Labs, which is the company behind CryptoKitties and NBA Top Shot, which he'll explain.
Everybody that has been watching the NFT space probably has heard of NBA Top Shot. Mm-hmm. And NBA Top Shot, for those that don't know it that well, it's basically a marketplace where fans can buy a little video clip of special moments in basketball games, just like a baseball fan could have bought a trading card. And these video moments are registered on a blockchain, meaning a chain of blocks of information that is kind of an accounting system for these things. And once you buy it, it's yours, and there's only one of those. So it's non-fungible, meaning you can't like just swap them with identical other things because everything's unique, like a baseball card might be. And so when that company had formed, before they did Top Shot, they created a little game on the blockchain called CryptoKitties, where you could basically take ownership of a digital cat, a little drawing of a cat. But every one of the little drawings was unique. So they all had unique digital DNA. And you could basically breed your cat with someone else's cat, and it would have unique babies. And you could sell those babies, baby cats, baby kittens. And anyway, so CryptoKitties was one of the first smash hits in kind of the consumer blockchain.
You became one of the first people to leverage non-fungible tokens or NFTs for good. Would you mind explaining the Hanu Kitty NFT?
Yeah. As they were starting to ramp up and as I was deciding to fund them, I told the management team, you know, I love these digital cats. They're very cute. And this thing is very fun, but I really would love to see this kind of activity do something good for this planet in real life. Mm-hmm. So I will write a check, but I need you to do something special for me, which is to create one very special CryptoKitty for an ocean charity gala that I'm throwing in a couple months. At first, I think they must have gone cross-eyed because cats don't like water, but they did come up with a really cute icon, which was a CryptoKitty that had a turtle shell and some fins. And I managed to auction that off for $25,000 4 years ago and gave the proceeds to Captain Paul Watson under the condition that he park his ship in front of the turtle nesting area off the island of Antigua. And he did that, and he protected the turtles by having people walk the beaches 24/7 for weeks to make sure that the, you know, poor people on the island didn't catch the turtles and eat them. And that was the first ever NFT for Ocean Charity for a real life application that that marked the beginning of the idea for what became MetaGood this year.
So we're talking about innovating all different things with crypto, with blockchain. Right now, we're talking about how you helped innovate charitable giving, which is kind of the first time that philanthropy has evolved. When we talk about crypto and blockchain and all these other tech innovations, that we think about how they disrupted legacy industries, banking, media, advertising, entertainment. And yet philanthropy has been sort of slow to evolve, except for now. Do you think that blockchain is the key to bringing charitable giving into kind of the 21st century?
You know, I think blockchain in combination with modern digital technology in general has the capability to make any industry a lot more efficient. Mm-hmm. And now that we're in this period where you can really empower communities of interest, I think that combination is incredibly powerful because blockchain gives you a couple of things. It gives you a very, very easy way to transfer value. It gives you transparency so you can see where that value goes. Mm. And it allows you to express that value in open marketplaces where you can see your item and kind of know where it is. And so as CryptoKitties was forming and building, it occurred to me that, you know, there's probably a way, as a for example, to have crypto rhinos and crypto elephants and crypto giraffes where every single endangered animal at the animal level, not the species level, could be represented by an NFT. Mm-hmm. And every time they moved on a marketplace, a very large percentage of that value would spin off to buy food and pay the rangers to protect them. And you could actually have these things time out on a smart contract. So they only lasted 90 days. And if you didn't sell it, you lost it, went back to the pool. You know, so you could encourage things to move along. And as I thought about that, I thought, you know, every single 501c3, every charity, every cause has a community of interest that cares, but there isn't a really low friction way to engage and transact. Mm. You know, there's a lot of social media tools now that allow you to push like emails and things like that. But in this world of Web3 and blockchain and kind of modern digital engagement tools, all of those get bundled together now, where the energy of a community of interest can express itself in its own currency. You know, so like we were talking about earlier, if you think about any brand like Starbucks, they have a virtual nation of people that like their coffee. And because there is a virtual nation of trust, and they know that, you know, that tokens are redeemable for cups of coffee, it's just like when colonists came to America and formed a colony and they had their own currency in Virginia or New York or any other state, or the US dollar backed by gold. You know, so I think we're right at the beginning of what could be a structural change where any cause, any community of interest can get their members engaged and fuel their causes in a low friction way.
I was talking to somebody recently who was saying, you know, not everything belongs on chain because we were talking about the likelihood that we'll end up in this Ready Player One universe where everybody's plugged in to a headset and, you know, very little IRL communication with other human beings. Do you foresee a world in which everything is on chain? I mean, when we think about NFT use cases right now, everyone's super focused on art and making sure that creators have a space where they can own their own creations in a way that previously they had been unable to do. But there are all these other use cases like in ticketing or even medical records. Some people believe that, you know, soon all of our medical records will be NFTs. We won't even know that they're NFTs, but there are some folks that believe, hey, that's the future we're moving toward. Where do you stand on that?
I totally do think that we will move to a world where pretty much all assets are registered. And I think the way to think about that is the technology waves that we have gone through in my lifetime, they're basically just a couple of them or three of them. You know, one was basically the organization of electrons. And then the next was the organization of bits. And now we're organizing assets, right? So if you think about Silicon Valley and its role in modernizing the world's economies, it really evolved replacing vacuum tubes. And most people alive today haven't seen vacuum tubes, but it used to be that all electronics devices were made out of things that looked like light bulbs. So you would have wires inside a little glass ball that you'd suck all the air out of so that the wires wouldn't overheat. And once you could put those in highly replicable molten sand slivers, you know, in silicon, you could build all kinds of things like laptops and now cell phones where you have a ton of power in your pocket. And coincident with that was the wave of sort of organizing the way bits flowed. So you move from moving electrons around to moving bits around when the internet got built out so that information could be moved anywhere pretty fast. And now that information is starting to represent assets. So if you think about, you know, the phrase, you know, Google organized the world's information, and that was pretty valuable. If you think about what it would be like to organize the world's assets, it could create tremendous efficiencies in the world in everything from value exchange around currencies to the things you mentioned, ticketing, to ownership of art, to the kind of ownership and transacting of real estate. You know, so really anything. You know, the world is basically made of people that transact. And so all of those transactions and the things that are being transacted can be recorded on blockchains indelibly at low cost. So just like, you know, the internet allowed people to send an email instead of handwriting letters or sending faxes or telexes, we're in this world where all of it's going to be a bunch of ones and zeros.
That is the show for today. Thank you for listening. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 a.m. Eastern. To get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, listen and follow Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable, but the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.